This, is it the 30th? 9th of August. Right out of the chute, I'm going to let everyone know here a couple of things. We will keep decorum in this room. If there's any clapping, any hissing, anything like that, I will direct Capitol Security to remove you. Our intent here today is to inform, ask a lot of questions. I personally am not at all looking to go to a vote today on this contract. We will vet the contract completely. There's members that have numerous questions on what's in the contract. So with that, I'd like to call up Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, historically, having served on this committee for quite a few years now, it's pretty normal for this committee to vote on this, actually, and to pass these and to serve. I mean, that's kind of our function when we're not in session, is to ratify these contracts and to, you know, pass them into law until we go back into session. And so you're not going to proceed like we have. I've only been here 8 years, but maybe before that they did something different, but during the last 8 years, that's kind of what we've done. So you have a different strategy or a different game plan?
Correct, Representative Lilly. As I said, my intent is to let all committee members ask questions of different items in the contract. I think that's very important. For a year and a half, it's been my contention that the citizens of the state have been in the dark on the negotiations, even though we had the administration negotiating the contracts. And we have asked numerous times. Matter of fact, a letter was sent, which you'll find in your packet, back in February or January 23rd, stating Representative Draskowski and I's concerns on the contracts. And so I've never been one just to rubber stamp something that comes before committee. They've had a year. The negotiations have been going on for a year and a half, the longest in state history. We have 30 days, this committee. We have until September 7th, and I believe we're going to take the time that we need to make to make the right decision, because I don't think anybody here right now feels that they could make an up or down vote until they get their questions answered. And I think that's a prudent thing to do as we move forward.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Representative. You know, certainly I'm willing to sit here all day and to discuss it and to figure out and get the questions answered, but it just, you know, it just, I question that you're using this committee as a different sort of tool than it's been historically used. And, you know, certainly you're chair and you're entitled to do, you know, what you want. You've got the votes 6-4, you can, you know, move as you like to move, and I respect that. You know, I understand elections have consequences. But so what would be your game plan then? Not to finish today and to just drag it out to 30 days, or just to, you know, do you want this to come up in special session to have the legislators actually pass it, or do you want to have it go to next year? I know you'd think you'd want to do it now because you could have a party in this, and, you know, next year I don't think you'll be in office here. So I just want to give you a chance to have a play.
Well, you're very astute that I didn't run for the Senate again. My intent, as I've said all along, the citizens of this state, all of them who have interest, will know what's in the contract. And what I would like to do is get through all those questions today, and then we're going to take a break, because each and every one of us will be going back into our districts, and by then the citizens will know what is in the contract, and I would like to hear from them once they hear what's in the contract, and then we'll come back and convene again, and we should be at that time ready to take an up or down vote. Okay? All right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
I move to approve the minutes of Tuesday, April 24th.
Motion to approve the minutes from Tuesday, April 24th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved. All right. Welcome, Commissioner, to the committee hearing. I think what I would like to just do is say committee. We call together. You have questions. I don't know who wants to start, but I'll let whoever has the first question move forward. Senator, Representative Benson.
Yeah. This could be for either. I know that in 2011, the Conference Committee for the State Government Finance Committee was working on their final adoption of the bill that went to the governor. There was a lot of material in the proposed budget about changing the way that we provide health benefits. None of that language was adopted as final language that went before the governor. But, of course, many, I'm sure, in this room can remember that what we tried to point out was that we need to do something different in terms of the contributions that were made by particularly single employees, but maybe all employees. I know that that's more than just the employees that are represented by the two contracts that are before us now, because Minsky is involved with CGIP and so on. But there was a proposal, of course, that would have changed dramatically. But I think what was intended in the discussion, and I know that there have been additional emails in the letter to the governor, that basically challenges the assumption that we can continue to allow for taxpayers of Minnesota, the state government, to completely fund the health insurance plan, that there's no employee contribution. So I'd like to know whether or not that topic ever came up in negotiations. We've got a contract before us now, and a little bit of information regarding whether or not that was ever an item on the agenda. And I know there was a number of proposals made ranging from asking single employees, for example, to pay 20% of their premiums, and what that would result in terms of the savings to the state. And in negotiations, I'd like to know, in terms of the process, was there any conversation at all by management in terms of bending down that cost curve?
Commissioner Holmes.
Good morning, Chairman Perry and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Holmes. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations at Minnesota Management and Budget. This is my boss next to me, of course. And I was the chief negotiator on the AFSCME contract and present during all of the insurance negotiations. I can tell you that, yes, one of our early proposals was to have singles start, the individual employee, if that's all the coverage they have, to start to pay part of that premium coverage. And there were discussions at the table about the costs of the health care and the different ways that we could make adjustments to shift costs, bring down costs. I can tell you that it was a very controversial subject in terms of singles paying. We held on to it. They held on to opposing it. At some point in the process, you either have to walk away from the table or you have to try to come up with some sort of alternate solution to address what you're trying to do. We chose to come up with some plan design changes that also that addressed cost savings in this contract, and that was the resolution of this of that issue.
Follow up.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you share with us the proposal that you laid on the table in terms of the contribution that you propose that they make and the savings to the budget that we would have realized if that would have been an item negotiated and accepted?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, when we were talking about various ways to save money, there were a number of different combinations of singles paying, changes to plan design in this way or that way, trying to look at all the different sorts of combinations. I believe in the beginning there was looking at what a 20% contribution would be, maybe 15 and 10, and I'm sorry I don't have a memory of every past and combination that we did, that we typically don't come here and get into those details. And I can't tell you off the top of my head what that would have saved.
Okay. Commissioner Holmes, when we spoke, I believe you and I had a discussion about that, and we got into why the original offer was 10% pickup by the employee, which would have been 40-some dollars a month, and there was a thought that you were hoping that maybe you could land on 5%, which would be, you know, $20 a month. That just never hit home, correct?
Yes, it didn't. That's correct.
All right. Representative Benson.
And final follow-up. How did you arrive at those numbers? I guess that's the first time that I'd heard that you'd started at one number and you'd hope to get to another number. But how did you arrive at 10% as a starting point? Were you using industry standard statistics, rather, you know, in terms of, for example, I mean, there are other government employees that work for school districts in the state of Minnesota. I've got some data from Wilmer in front of me, in fact, you know, where they pay. How did you arrive at starting at 10%? Was that just like a good faith number you picked, or did you look at what other contracts normally would require of employee contributions to health care?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, it was probably a combination of things. First of all, under the current contract, employees do contribute towards the premium if they have dependent coverage, and they contribute 15%. So that had some sort of factor. What would something comparable to look at that? Also, I think that there are some jurisdictions that maybe come in around the 10% mark. So I'm not going to say there was any magic to what we picked. We were simply looking at different numbers and the amount of cost savings.
Commissioner Holmes, what would that 15% be? Could you articulate the cost in dollars and cents?
Mr. Chair, are you saying how much, what would be the value of the savings if singles started contributing 15% of the premium?
No, you just made the statement that the employee pays 15% of the dependents. Is there an average monthly dollar and cent total you can give us on that?
Yes.
While they're looking that up, I can tell you, I know hands are up, but I have Downey, Representative Downey Draskowski, and then Representative Winkler on the list.
Correct.
As you, so raise your hand, and I'll just keep adding it down. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, currently for dependent coverage, the employee pays $130.20 per month.
All right, thank you very much. We'll move on. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, with regard to Representative Lilly's comments at the beginning, I actually really appreciate your approach to this. It's a lot to absorb. This is my first time on this subcommittee, and having taken in all the information here in just literally the last week or so of days and trying to get some preliminary questions answered, I do think it's valuable to take some time today to get questions answered and then have some additional time to process and hear from our constituents on this. So thank you for this approach. And Commissioner Holmes, I think this might be for you, but whoever can answer it, I just want to make sure I am kind of level set on the overall concept here, because I know we're talking about the ratification of a new contract, which from what I understand doesn't mean that the old contract isn't currently in effect and wouldn't remain in effect if we didn't approve the new one. So if my assumption is right, you don't have to correct me. If I'm wrong, please do. But I also, in the email exchanges with you and Mr. Hubinger, came to realize that under the existing contract, so if we don't vote or if we vote to not ratify this new contract, under the existing contract, there is actually a $46 million increase in the current, well, the new biennium, the biennium under the new contract, the 2012-13 biennium, and that if we ratify the new contract, that increase goes from $46 million to $59 million. And so I just want to make sure I'm clear on that, because I think the impression here is that state employees are either not going to get a raise or get a raise based on what we do here. But the fact is of the matter is that under the existing contract, if we didn't approve the new one, there would be an increase of $46 million, and the new one simply raises that increase another $13 million to $59 million. Do I have that correct?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, you're certainly accurate in saying that if we were to remain under the existing contract, there is no across-the-board increase in that existing contract, whereas in the new, the contract that's before you, there is a 2% across-the-board increase during the last 6 months of the term of this contract. And so there are insurance savings, but there is also that cost. So you are accurate in saying that the new contract involves more money than the existing contract. Your exact numbers I'm not sure of because I have them broken down. But I know we had email exchanges, and I assume that I have them broken down by the AFSCME contract and the MAPE contract. So we will all trust your addition.
Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Holmes, thank you. I think that wasn't quite the clarification I was looking for. I'll just maybe ask it a separate way. So if we vote down this new contract, according to the email data that I have, under the existing contract without the 2% kicker on the back end under the new contract, AFSCME, according to your email, would get a $16.766 million increase for this biennium under the existing contract, and MAPE would realize a $29.114 million increase. I just did rough math and rounded. That's a $46 million increase under the existing contracts.
Commissioner Holmes,
is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just so the public is aware and everybody here in the room is aware, the decision here today or in the next meeting when we actually come to a vote isn't whether to provide state employees an increase. It's whether to provide them a $46 million increase or a $59 million increase. And so we're really talking about some of these other provisions and whether or not the extra $13 million is part of what we would want to do. And I think that's really, really important. And, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to get another question in. And then I have others, too, but I'll step aside for now after we clarify this one. That increase, my understanding from the email exchanges we had is that increase of $46 million under the under the current contract and $59 million under the proposed new contract, that's an increase compared to the base, which is currently in place for the 2012 and 13 biennium, and that it's not in comparison, it's not an increase compared to the previous biennium's total compensation for the workforce. And so this whole base calculation is something that's new to those of us from the private sector, where a reduction in an increase, which is still an increase, somehow becomes called a cut. And so I'm wondering if that same kind of nomenclature is in play here. Can you describe how the compensation base, the total cost of wages and benefits for 2012 and 13 is calculated, and if in fact these increases we're talking about are an increase to that base for 12 and 13, or whether those increases we're talking about are compared to the last biennium?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, normally we begin negotiations before the end of the biennium. And so we have to come up with a projection about how much will be spent on total compensation that biennium to use as our base. So normally we're looking at numbers in March or April. And again, we haven't completed the biennium, so we don't know what our actual spend on compensation has been. So we have a methodology that we use. where we, at the point where we're looking at, if we're in April, we look at what the total compensation is right then. We have built into our various budget and accounting systems a projection tool that makes some assumptions. There will be some steps that will be added along the way that people are entitled to, and we project out to the end of the biennium. We take the pay period closest to the end of the biennium, and we take the total compensation for that pay period, and we multiply it by 26. There are 26 pay periods in the year, and that is the number we come up that we use for our biennial base.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner Holmes. That is consistent with what we had started talking about, and you actually gave me the formula for how it takes place, so that's helpful. With the benefit of hindsight, the 2012-13 base that these increases are calculated off of, the $46 million increase if we stay with the existing contract and the $59 million increase if we approve the new one, are those increases compared to the 2012-13 base number that you're talking about?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, those increases are compared to the calculation that I just described.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Holmes, do you know, again, with the benefit of hindsight, whether that base number that these increases are calculated off of, was that base higher or lower than the previous year's actual total compensation, the 2011 fiscal year actual compensation?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I don't know precisely for this biennium how they pair up. I do know that in the past we go back and see how we compared, and we are typically very close, like within 1 or 2% of what we've projected versus actual spend. And I can get you that information if you'd like to see it.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Holmes, I actually would really like to see that. My gut is that if you take the last pay period of a fiscal year and then project that pay period across the next fiscal year, that last fiscal year or that last pay period of the previous fiscal year probably represents the high watermark of compensation. Maybe not. And so my question is whether or not this $46 million increase under the existing contract and $59 million increase under the new contract is actually, if it's compared to the base, and the base is actually an increase over the previous year's compensation, there might be even another 1 to 2% increase compared to the actual pay that people received in the previous year. And so we might actually be understating the amount of the increase compared to what people actually earned in the previous year. And I have always questioned this. I go back and look at the all these state contracts, and I keep hearing about zeros, and you go back and look, and there aren't really very many zeros. But if, in fact, all of the increases that I've seen over the years I've been here were compared to the base, we may actually have been, I won't say misled, but we might have misunderstood to think that those increases were actually compared to what people made in the previous year, and they're not. Off of a projected increase in the current in the new biennium. So this is important for me, and this is one of the reasons why I really appreciate Chairman Perry's decision to have this hearing today to get the information, because I want to make sure we're treating people fairly, and we want to compensate them for the work that they're doing. But if we have increases...
Excuse me, folks. Don't make me clear the room.
Mr. Chair, that's an inappropriate threat. I think
Representative Wayne Clark, excuse me. I'm the chair. And at the beginning, I said I would not put up with any of
laughing,
snickering, any of it.
Mr. Chair,
there's no place here.
You said clapping and cheering and groaning or something like that. And I think if somebody's funny on the committee and people laugh, I mean, that's a human reaction.
I didn't believe Representative Downey was being funny. I believe he was asking specific questions. Well, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I don't think the taxpayers think Mr. Downey was being funny either, and there are not a lot of them in the room today.
They're all taxpayers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, everybody in this room is a taxpayer.
I apologize, Senator. Mr. Chair, and to the people in the room. I understand they're taxpayers, but there are a lot more people who have a stake in this game who aren't laughing.
Mr. Chair, if I could just continue my final statement on my questions, I'd appreciate it, and then I'll defer to others on the committee.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Ms. Holmes, and I was entirely serious in terms of wanting to treat people fairly. And in my mind, the existing contract with a $46 million increase in the upcoming biennium could indeed be considered fair. The $59 million increase under the proposed new contract could, in fact, be considered fair. When we talk about those increases, though, I'd like to know whether those are increases compared to what people actually made in the previous year, not compared to some kind of projected base, which is what we always do in state government, right? We project all this base spending. We run around telling people we're cutting spending when, in fact, compared to the previous year, it's still an increase. And it feels to me like we have the same possibility here. And for all the years I've been here looking at percentage increases in compensation and benefits and all of that, if in fact those increases were compared to some calculated base as compared to the actual compensation, then I don't think we've been dealing with real numbers. So I would like to get those numbers. And again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this hearing to start parting the clouds on some of this.
All right. Thank you. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would echo Representative Downey's sentiments about us actually digging into this, these materials and these proposals, and having these types of discussions. And Representative Lilly, I was on the committee the last few years, and you know, we kind of did some cursory discussions, but it felt to me a lot of times as we were going through those contracts that they came in and we passed them in the same meeting. There wasn't the amount of deliberation or additional thought. I think this is very helpful, and I think it's a very important process and a good approach. Mr. Chair, and actually Ms. Holmes, I'm curious, you know, I in my district have a lot of people who work for the private sector, and it's by far the majority of the people in my district, a very large majority of the people in the district work for the private sector in a variety of areas. And what we're seeing, of course, is over the last 2 to 3 years is actually many companies having to lay people off. We've got 175,000 Minnesotans that don't have a job today. And of course, we realize that it is the private sector that funds government and pays for not only employee benefits, but the machinery of government, all of the different pieces of government expense that we bring forward. So as we look at the private sector, we're seeing companies actually having to have laid people off. We're seeing actual reductions in total compensations, actual reductions. Some cases, some companies at this point, especially with Obamacare coming now, are talking about getting rid of their health insurance for their employees.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Is that really necessary?
You will have your chance to speak as well. Representative Drazkowski has the floor right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
What we are seeing, Ms. Holmes, is a very difficult time out there in the private sector. And I'm curious about the discussions that you had in the negotiations. And were some of those examples brought out in your negotiations? Did you look at some private sector numbers and what was going on there? And if so, could you share with us what those were, what the source of that data was that you brought forward and shared in the negotiations to look at what the rest of the world is doing?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, at least let me start, because certainly the department starts and makes sure that we have some discussions and comparisons with the private sector. That's certainly a constant conversation with the legislature. That being said, the department and the governor also have a responsibility to have an effective workforce. And so, like the employers that you're talking about, what we try to look at as well is the level of pay, the level of turnover, the quality and the productivity of improvements of employees.
so that we can maintain an effective workforce of the state. Because in the end, those public services are also an important component of a successful state. Delivering services, whether it's a good times for the state's economy or bad times for the state's economy, and that is also part of the context that we have to approach as an employer to make sure that our workforce has a fair deal and that we also have a fair deal for the taxpayers.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner and Ms. Holmes, I'm curious about what the specific pieces of data, what the sources were that was brought forward in the discussion, if there was any. That's what I'm curious about.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, from my experience, that isn't, and I can defer to Assistant Commissioner Holmes, but that isn't necessarily part of the negotiation directly. It is part of the context, so that we have, to the extent possible, understanding of where the private sector is at. But even as some of the studies have attempted, it's often difficult to directly compare a public sector employee who may be working in a state-operated services institution with somebody who may be in a private sector. So it is at times difficult to make some of those direct comparisons.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Commissioner, what I'm hearing is you don't recall exactly what was included in terms of private sector comparisons. It seems to me around this place we are very data-driven in many of the deliberations in many of the areas we work with. You know, I would expect that being involved in something this important, it would be fairly easy to recall at least one or two of the comparisons that were used, the actual data sources. And so what I'm hearing is you don't recall that. But I'd just like to go on, Mr. Chair, if I could. Commissioner and Ms. Holmes, as I mentioned, in the private sector, we have seen actual total compensation decreases in many of our businesses out there. Has state government and state government employees, have they taken actual total compensation decreases over any of the last decades that you can recall?
Commissioner Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, total compensation decreases. Certainly, we've had times when there have been no across-the-board increases. That was the case in fiscal 9. Fiscal 10 was a zero across-the-board increase. Fiscal 11, the first 18 months of this contract before you, it's a 0% increase, and there isn't a wage, an across-the-board increase that's due. Typically, that's sort of a cost of living increase until the last 6 months. Another component, as you well know, of our wages are the step increases. And those step increases have generally occurred except for 1 year. I believe that was fiscal 9. Now, step increases are not aimed at cost of living sorts of adjustments. That's not the intent of them. The intent of step increases is to recognize that if an employee has worked for a year, they have improved in knowledge, in skills, in efficiency, and they are worth more to us. And that's why they get a step increase as long as their performance has been satisfactory. You know, the other components that go into total comp, the insurance and the retirement, we know that the insurance costs have been increasing. So when we get to the bottom line of all those, have there been decreases in total compensation? I don't believe there have. But have the increases been large? No, they haven't. One other comment I might make about when you're talking about the private sector, when we say, how do you compare with the private sector? Do you want us to compare ourselves, the size of state government, the size of the budget, the complexity of what we do, the fact that a lot of our employees are located in the metropolitan area? Who should we be comparing ourselves with? 3M? Should we be comparing ourselves with the private sector as it exists in a small Minnesota town? Generalizing is, I don't know what that gets us. One other comment I'll make about, you were asking whether or not market factors ever come into play. in the sort of broad categories that we have in negotiations we're addressing for the whole unit with various types of employees, we don't bring a lot of market factors in. We are more looking at what our economic projections are for our budget, because that governs us more. We do have a process, what that we call inequity adjustments, because occasionally what we find is we have trouble hiring a particular classification at the current rate. And one of the things we have to look at is what's happening in the market. Why are we having trouble hiring these people? So we do have a process that does get into that at times. We didn't do that. We haven't gone through that process yet with any particular classifications.
Representative Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Daskowski, to just add to the data that you were looking for, basically total compensation hasn't decreased, but it has been constant. Basically 2009, 2010, 2011, total compensation for state employees was virtually flat. I would expect 2012 will be in similar in nature as well, because during that period of time we've also been reducing the size of the workforce. The FTE count has been lower during that period of time. So total compensation for the state employees, while getting the job done, has been constant.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner and Ms. Holmes. You know, Commissioner, back to Representative Downey's point, if we start to look at actual versus actual, that may not even hold true. But I appreciate you both saying that state government has not taken a decrease in total compensation in any of the decades that you can recall. While we see that happening regularly in the private sector, I find that somewhat shocking. One question, additional question, Mr. Chair, that I have. Actually, I've got two more, and they're related. And that would be, Ms. Holmes or Commissioner, going back again to the current situation we have, and I've heard in the lead-up to this meeting some of the unions talking about, you know, we're without a contract, and it's and trying to create the impression that you know, that people are going to become unemployed or something like that. I don't really recognize the kind of the context around there. But as we look at the current situation we have, and we've had discussion debates over the last legislative session around a bill that I brought to end what is really an autopilot increase with the steps and the additional insurance liability that the state is obligated to take on in the case of an unsettled contract like we have for the last year and coming up on a year and a month now. So the question is, have employee compensation, has employee compensation increased during this autopilot period as you look at the numbers?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Draskowski, to the extent that step increases have been granted, step increases are built into our labor contracts, and so they have been granted while we've been negotiating this new contract. So to that extent that there have been increases, but there have been no across-the-board increases during this period of time.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Holmes. So what I'm hearing and what I understand to be is that as you look at groups of employees and total costs of total compensation in those groups, we are experiencing actual increases in total compensation across that group as an average person across the group. Is that correct?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Draskowski, approximately 50% of state employees are eligible for step increases. You don't continue to get step increases once you reach the top of the pay range for your particular job classification. So of those, there's approximately 50% of the employees who've been getting increases. The rest of the employees at the top of their range, there have been 0% across the board increases for the last several years, well, for the last three years.
Ms. Holmes, what is that number?
Excuse me?
You say 50% of the employees are eligible. I guess I just wanted to follow up. How many employees is that, and do they automatically get the step increase?
Mr. Chairman, for the AFSCME contract, it covers 5 separate bargaining units, and the total number of employees in the AFSCME unit is approximately 15,000 in the AFSCME units that this contract before you. The MAPE contract covers approximately 12,500 employees. So, again, if we say on average state employees, approximately 50% are eligible for step increases, those would be the numbers you'd look
at. So about 13,200 are eligible.
The other thing I want to remind the subcommittee about is the other factor that we do have to look at is that we had a 3-week state shutdown. 19,000 employees were laid off. 19,000 employees didn't get a paycheck for about 3 weeks. If you look at that amount of money that they didn't get, what we're doing in the contract isn't making up for any of that. So I guess maybe I'd alter my comment about, yes, there are increases constantly going on. Those step increases going on, but when you look at actual spend, actual spend that you're talking about, we have this big 3-week gap in 2011 because of the state shutdown.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes, and I've heard the discussion, too. State government's been shut down for 3 weeks. Well, we don't just pay people because they're there. We pay people for work, and they also didn't work. So I think we need to remember that. But back to that question about you said 50% of the employees are eligible for step increases. The other 50%, it sounds like, did not receive decreases then. I thought I heard you say they stayed the same. So does that mean then that as a group and on an average within the group, that those folks in that area, as we're on this autopilot increase time for the last 13 months, does that mean that they actually increased on this autopilot term that we're on here?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yeah, I think that's what we were discussing. There have been employees who have got increases if they had satisfactory performance. That's about 50% of the employees are eligible. If you try to factor in, there are some of those employees now that wouldn't have been paid during the shutdown. So where it all evens out, levels out, I'm not exactly sure.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. Ms. Holmes, it's really a yes or no question. As a group, was there a total compensation increase during this autopilot time?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I have not sat down and calculated the impact of the shutdown on how it measures out with the step increases that would have been granted. So I'm sorry, I can't answer that yes or no.
Mr. Chair, one more
Representative
question.
Drazkowski.
Ms. Holmes, the related question is in the area of insurance compensation. I understand that employees were able to, during this autopilot time for the last 13 months, be able to keep the same insurance coverage they had with no additional liability to them, with all of that additional liability being picked up by state government. Is that accurate?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, during the period of the shutdown, employee insurance benefits continued. To stop those benefits and for your employees, for all of you, and have a risk of some sort of catastrophic illness during that time was something we didn't want to do. We entered into a memorandum of understanding that continued existing insurance coverage. To the extent that employees had dependent coverage and have to pay that $130 per month, they still had to pay that $130 per month during that time.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Holmes, you were kind of focused on the 3-week shutdown. I'm looking at really the 13 months that we've gone since the contracts expired. And again, to reiterate my question, my understanding is that all state employees are carrying the same insurance coverage that they had before July 1st of 2011. And the additional costs, the inflationary costs, whatever the additional costs are to maintain that same level of coverage has been borne by state government at a rate of 100% of the additional costs. Is that accurate?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, we bargain our insurance, and I know I've talked to you about this before. Our insurance plans are based on calendar years, and our collective bargaining agreements are based on fiscal years. So to the extent what has happened since July 1st, last July 1st, when the contract was expired, there have been some increases in medical trends, and to the extent the employer pays 100% of the employee coverage, yes, we have been picking up those increases.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think I heard from Ms. Holmes. I was going to ask Mr. Showalter, but I think we got the answer to the question. Thank you.
All right. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski asked if there had ever been a compensation decrease, and the simple answer is yes, there was in this biennium. When state employees lost $65 million when state government was shut down. And even under Representative Downey's math, a $59 million increase, if we approve this contract, would still be $6 million less than what they lost during the shutdown. And Representative Drazkowski and Mr. Chair, I feel like you are not showing proper respect to the people in the room, especially your comment about paying people who don't work. Certainly wasn't their fault that government was shut down, and there were certainly plenty of legislators who got paid for not working during that time. And, Mr. Chair, if this was a committee hearing to discuss business taxation and the room were filled with businesses, I don't think that you would be making threats at the outset of the hearing to tell them that if they made any untoward noise, including laughing, that they would have to be ejected from the room. I think that you are not treating these people with respect. And I would
excuse
just like
me,
to take a moment to welcome
me,
all of you here.
Excuse me, Representative Winkler. Excuse me. I have said that to every committee meeting as a chairman before I've started. And I will continue to do that. This is no disrespect for anyone that comes before my committee. They need to know my ground rules as the chairman. Are you clear on that, Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, you threatened to clear the room when the audience laughed.
Exactly. And I will. If it gets ruly again or out of control, I will adjourn and or take a recess and have the room cleared. That's my rules for my committee.
Mr. Chair,
when you run a committee, Representative Winkler, you can have your rules. But until you do, we'll live by my rules in this committee.
Mr. Chair, and to the members of the audience, I'd like to welcome you to the building that you pay for. And to have to come to the room and have an opportunity to speak and hear about an issue that directly affects your lives. And I'd like to thank you for the work that you do on behalf of the people of the state. And I'd also like to thank you for the work that you do in implementing all of the policy decisions that we so gloriously make here at the legislature. So thank you for coming. Be careful. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski raised this comparison with the private sector. And I wouldn't ask the commissioner or the assistant commissioner or deputy, I'm not assistant commissioner, to have these figures at their fingertips. But just it's pretty easy, Representative Drazkowski, to do a little research. You can pull up CNN, Money Magazine is predicting that next year overall private sector employee raises will be 2.9%, which is considerably higher than what we're talking about here. If you look at the last 3 years, private sector total compensation has increased every year. Now, you might not notice that because most of that compensation increase has flowed to people at the very top of the business world. It hasn't flowed to most workers in the economy. So most people in your district have lost wages or have stayed flat. But total private sector compensation in the economy has increased every year by significantly more than what state government is increasing by. And if you look, this is an institute at Cornell University, I'm not sure what ILR stands for, probably labor relations. If you look, it's a very simple chart. If you look at the last 3 years, every single year private sector total compensation has increased more than public sector total compensation. Public employees, state employees, for the last 2 years have received no raise. And Representative Benson, you keep talking about the fact that there's no health care, employee contribution to health care, but of course that's not true. People pay co-pays and deductibles. And all of these things are negotiated out. There's a question of there's premiums, there's co-pays, and there's deductibles. And if you have a pot of money, you can divide it up between those three things any way you want. It's all negotiated. So if you look at the broader context here, where even in the middle of this terrible recession, total private sector compensation is going up faster than public sector compensation. You look at people who have been without a new contract for 18 months. They've lost $65 million because of our failure to pass a budget. I don't think it's unreasonable to actually approve this contract today. Mr. Chair, for the last several meetings I've been at, the complaint has been, why is this negotiation taking so long? Why is this so slow? Why can't we get this done? Why can't we move on? Aren't these public sector workers getting a better deal by sticking to the old contract than they are if they would just move on to the new contract? Aren't they dragging their feet to get something better? And now it's ready for you. It's in front of you. You've had time to look at it. We have all day long, as Representative Lilly said, to get into this contract. But now, after it's taken so long, in your view, and after they've been getting this great deal by living under the prior contract, suddenly you don't want to move forward on it. You have to really understand that people might be a little bit confused in the audience, and occasionally that, you know, might lead to them verbalizing that a little bit. So, Mr. Chair, I think we're not really comparing things very fairly here. The question I have back to Ms. Holmes is actually a very specific one, and that's about health care. It's my understanding that if we do not approve the contract, we are actually going to be costing more in health care because we are not going to be getting the savings out of employee contributions that this new contract would otherwise require. Is that correct?
Ms. Holmes, before you answer that, when was the contract delivered to the committee? Officially delivered to the committee.
Mr. Chair, you have had a copy of the legislative version of this contract for some weeks, and I believe that's been available on your website. We typically do not give you the official signed copy until the day before the hearing out of consideration for the 30 days to give you the full 30 days. It was delivered to Mr. Hubinger yesterday, but you've had the legislative format for some
time. When was it ratified?
The agreement, I received notification of the ratification on July 30th. The vote by the AFSCME and MAPE members took place the previous week.
All right. I just wanted to clarify Representative Winkler's statement that we have had plenty of time to digest this, and in reality, you can't digest it until it's ratified and you know what's actually going to be in it. So we've had 10 days. 10 days as opposed to almost a year and a half, Representative Winkler. We haven't had time. That's why this meeting, that's why you're asking questions, everybody is. So now you can please move forward, Ms. Holmes, and answer.
Mr. Chair, you keep running this meeting. You know, Mr. Representative Benson had a question, and then you would kind of pile on with your own little question. Now Representative Winkler had a question, and you kind of editorialize. Is that how you work it in the Senate? I don't think chairs in the House do that. Is that allowed in the Senate?
When you're chair, it is.
So all's good and fair and love and war in the Senate.
I guess that's what it is.
It's probably a blessing. You're down to your last three meetings. I figure you'll milk this for 3 days of per diem, perhaps.
We'll take a 10-minute recess. We'll call the committee meeting back to order here and continue with our questioning. And I think we left off with Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question was about health care. But I think that we have to be aware that having 10 days to review a contract that's been negotiated like this and understanding totally the financial implications of it is certainly time enough for us to make a decision based on what we do at the legislature all the time. About 13 months ago when we were coming out of a government shutdown and we had closed-door negotiations between senators and representatives and the governor, and when we had a special session called, we had no time to pass an entire state budget. And so having 10 days, or I mean 10 days, to have 10 days or a couple of weeks to review a contract that's been fully negotiated, that frankly its financial implications are pretty straightforward, really isn't too much time for us. So I'm not sure I believe that it's necessary to delay this further. But I do think it's important to ask questions. And one of the questions I had for Ms. Holmes, or for Assistant Commissioner Holmes, was the impact of the new contract on health care cost savings compared to sticking with the old contract.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the proposed contracts that are before you, the insurance provisions in these contracts typically carry over to the rest of our contracts, although negotiations with them have not been finalized. They carry over to the judicial branch, the legislative branch, the Constitution officers, all of your employees. And if we look at the changes to what employees will be paying, the increases that employees will be paying under this proposed contract via increases to co-pays, to first dollar deductibles, to co-insurance. Over calendar year 2013, we will save, the state will save $7.9 million. And every year thereafter, because those are permanent changes, we will save $7.9 million in health care costs.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Winkler.
Assistant Commissioner Holmes. So just in simple terms, if we do not approve the contract, we lose the $8 million in health care savings in calendar year 2013?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, that is correct.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes, I was also interested in this number from Representative Downey about a $46 million increase versus a $59 million increase. I just want to be clear that if we're talking about sticking with the prior contract and extending that through this biennium, that would result in a $46 million total spend that would be greater. But we're not talking about $46 million in raises for all employees. We're talking about health care cost increase and some step increases. But there would be no raise for the average employee in the state of Minnesota on a across-the-board basis unless we approve the new contract. Isn't that correct?
Ms. Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, yes.
Representative Winkler?
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Holmes, it seems like we are deciding between providing a 2% raise for 6 months and saving $7.9 million in health care costs at the same time, which seems to me a pretty good deal compared to just continuing what we're doing, basically allowing step increases for some employees but not for others, leaving some employees with 4 years of no increase and others continuing to receive step increases. And the concern I have there is if you have workers at the top of their pay scale, and we're talking about wanting to have the right kind of incentives in place to retain top talent. I know, for example, simple example is the Office of the Legislative Auditor. They run into problems retaining talent because of their pay. If we're just topping people out and can give no increase for 2 years, how do we retain people who are at the top of their pay scale? How do we retain the most talented, most experienced workers?
Ms. Holm, or Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I appreciate you pointing that out, because the steps, in the very nature of the steps, is to reward and incent people as they progress, as they become more effective, as they learn the jobs better, and they gather more skills. It is not an across-the-board nature. It is really trying to take people who start those jobs and make sure that the state can keep them. As a workforce strategy, that makes sense, because we have seen significant turnover in high-demand occupations. And so that is one of the ways that the state as an employer tries to keep some of those newer employees, those younger employers, involved in the state so that we have the workforce we need in the future.
Ms. Holmes?
Mr. Chair, and in addition to what Representative Winkler said, your question about what happens when they get at the top, though, and he was correct in saying that they no longer are eligible for any step increases. They sit there without any sort of raises. They are the most experienced employees, and there is little incentive for them to stay or for motivation purposes, and that's a concern for any employer, and we share that concern.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members of the committee might be interested in the same little article I found, which is pretty easy to find. It said that the top 8% of the workforce is going to get a 4.5% pay increase next year. I mean, it's a projection, but it's probably reasonable. And about 54% of the workforce is going to get a 2.4 pay increase. So that means that in the private sector, more of the compensation increases are going to people at the top, the highest performing workers. And if you want to make a comparison between public and private, if we accept this contract, we'll at least be able to give some increase to the workers at the top of the pay scale at the state level, so that we are doing more what the private sector does, which is to reward the top talent. I think there are problems in how the private sector is paying employees globally, but if the standard is comparing us to the private sector, we'd be better off under the new contract so that we can actually give a bump to people who are at the top of the pay scale. And it seems to me that this is a much better deal for the state and for the taxpayers to accept this new contract, because it does provide some incentive and some increase for people who are performing at the highest level in state government. It saves us $7.9 million in health care. It does something to make up for the state government shutdown and the $65 million in lost wages last year for everybody by this across-the-board 2% increase. And it's just a very modest and very reasonable increase that I think any employer would want to provide. It doesn't, and I guess the final point is, it doesn't increase our costs. We've already appropriated the money. We've already set the budget. This is all within the budget. So this is just allocating the funds within the budget to do some things that I think would be better for the workforce and would make state government work a lot better. And for that reason, I think it's pretty straightforward that as reasonable, responsible employers, we should approve this new contract.
Thank you. Representative Benson, you were on the list next.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Holmes, Representative Winkler brought up the fact that we stand to save $7.1 million because of the changes in health care, but that would be embedded in the $59 million that it will go up. So if we keep the same contract, it goes up $46 million. If we pass the new contract, it goes up $59 million. Embedded in that $59 million is the $7.9 million in savings. I guess what I'm getting to is that anytime you negotiate something, be it benefit changes, there's always an offset. You don't, when you're bargaining, you never get something for nothing. It'd be the first time I've ever seen it done. So when you talk about the fact that you have changed health care and you've increased co-pays and some of the other items that you described when Representative Winkler was asking the questions, didn't you, in essence, in order to get those changes made, basically have to offset that with some other area of compensation in the contract?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I don't think we looked at it that way. We've heard consistent messages from you this round about your concern about the amount of money that employees pay towards their own health care, and you have a contract in front of you that does shift some of those costs to them. We also, on a separate plane, need to address the wage issue for all employees, and those sometimes are separate concerns given the zeros that have been given in the last several rounds. So, you know, bottom line, when you look at it, your analysis is correct. But when you look at some of the policy reasons behind this change versus this change, I think this is very responsive to what you've asked for and what we feel we need.
Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I was that answers the question, and for me at least. I don't know if it clarifies it for anybody else that's listening, but of course, to me, when you're negotiating a contract, when you get down to the end, it's all about the money, and it's the same pool of money. So how you massage the benefits and how much pay is going to be on that check. If you would have not increased at all in compensation and went for a 15%, we'll say that the singles need to pay the same amount as the marrieds with dependents or non-marrieds with dependents, whatever. The bottom line would have been that they would have seen a decrease. So to compensate for that, there had to be, in order for them to agree to something, there had to be an overall increase in compensation. And you more or less said that. It was kind of a dual track. Am I incorrect with that?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I don't think we disagree with each other. It's just... Okay. There are places from an employer's perspective that we would prefer increases to go. And there are places in the contract where, you know, the employees would prefer there aren't changes. So that does drive our decision. Yes, at some point it's a bottom line, but that's not the only thing that drives how we portion the changes out.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benzeve, I may also add that the health care plan that we're talking about sets the standard and the pattern that is likely to be used for state colleges and universities, for a number of other contracts to come. One of the strengths of this process is that we come together and try to find some way to bend the curve as much as possible, because health care costs are a societal issue, it's a budget issue, it's a contract issue. So, you know, the Advantage program, getting single pharmacy benefits, and ultimately finding some way to have a health plan that serves lots of different employees in lots of different labor markets is also a part of the challenge that Assistant Commissioner Holmes has to face.
Representative Benson.
I've got a couple more questions, and I'll try to keep them brief. And we talked about there's about almost 14,000 that would have been in step process and have not reached their terminal step, their last step of in the schedule. And I, having worked in that process for 30 years, I kind of understand it. And I also know that it's very rare that those, I mean, I know we've kind of scoffed at the fact that they're not automatic, but in essence, they really are. It takes quite the documentation or disciplinary issue in order to not grant a step. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. What I'm getting towards is the question is, do you have any idea of how many were denied? What percent of total steps were denied in the process?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we're both, we know there's, I think, that data available. I don't have that here. We would be happy to get that for you. And I just on behalf of the, you know, stewardship of the state, we are focusing as an administration on those performance evaluations, making sure that we work with employees in unison to get to the right outcomes, to get and achieve the programs that are set up by law. So, you know, we may see weaknesses in that evaluation, that personnel evaluation system. That's one of our focuses as well. It's separate from this contract. But we're trying to make sure that working with our employees, we can get that done.
My goal isn't to say that we've got – I think the vast, vast majority of state employees that have covered these contracts are doing an outstanding job. So I'm not trying to get at or point fingers at. There's a number of people that should have been fired and not got their step. But just to get to the point that when we talk about step increases, they are almost automatic. That is part of the planning for compensation. My guess is that when you really look at it, you're talking about less than 1% of your employees probably fail to reach the necessary threshold in order to get their step increase.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I agree. The majority of our employees perform at a satisfactory, if not higher, level.
Right.
Senator Benson.
Thank you.
Elevation. Representative Benson.
I got one last question. We can argue about how long it took. I had a couple of other process questions, and they certainly can be answered in an email or some other form in terms of the number of times you met and so on and so forth. But one last burning question is, what kind of direction were you provided by the governor's office about any items in the contract? You know, aside from, yeah, we want a contract, specific specific items within the contract that you were given particular direction by the governor's office.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, the process that we go through to develop our proposals involves getting feedback from the agencies, getting feedback from the personnel directors about what's working, what's not. We have proposals from the past that weren't agreed to that maybe we bring forward. We do take that whole package of ideas that we have, and the governor does see those. And I went through each one of them with him. And there are some that he maybe, I don't know if I disagreed. I remember him once saying, well, you'll never get that. You know, he comments on those and those sorts of things. I mean, certainly the focus of his input was on the wages and the insurance and how do we balance our fiscal concerns with our recent history, with the expectations of the employees. We are a collective bargaining state. And the expectations of the public for this great, efficient service, they still expect, even when we have budget problems. So he was very engaged, if that's what you're asking. This wasn't just my idea.
Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I was really wanting a more specific answer about items on an agenda that he may have had that was important enough for him to make sure that they were mentioned and emphasized in discussions around these negotiations.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I don't have a particular list. I think the key thing here is he wanted us to negotiate. He wanted us to work through the process so that ultimately we could get to a solution. We had plenty of issues. These contracts, as the committee knows, has many issues, many questions embedded in it. Those that are in it, those that didn't make it there. We try to balance those things constantly.
Senator Metz.
First of all, I want to apologize for being late. I had a doctor's appointment that was set up quite a while ago. But I don't know what we're talking about here today. You got a very, very modest 2% increase. And the way I see it, it's only for 6 months. What are we doing here? And if you don't make the tier jump, the cost of that gallon of milk or gasoline is the same for the person that doesn't get that jump. So I think they deserve the same as somebody that would make the tier. Again, the cost of these product or things that the essentials that people buy is no different from what class you're in or the other. So, we shouldn't even be here. I mean, this is a contractual thing that people sat down for months working on. It's a pre-agreed deal. It's a modest agreement. Representative Winkler's talked about the state employees' contributions to the plan, that $7 million that they're paying, that agreed to pay, and it'll be over like $30 million over the next few years. So I think we should ratify this thing and go home. And again, it's already budgeted for. I don't know why we're here.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things, if I could. I don't want to divert too far from the contract, but some of the kind of total cost of compensation questions that we've asked that we still have, I think, an answer or two to get in terms of the base versus the prior year and things, have a huge interaction with the size of the workforce. And department issued its 2011 workforce report, and I just want to understand, at least at a high level, how the size and shape of the workforce is impacting kind of the total cost of compensation for the state. And so I'm looking at the workforce report, and a couple things jump out at me. One is that there's a reduction in the workforce. Fairly substantial from what I can tell. If I looked at your FTE chart, right, there was maybe a 1,500 count reduction in full-time equivalents in the year ending fiscal year 2011, or I'm sorry, in 2012, so actually just the last month. So that represents a fairly sizable reduction in FTE count. And yet we see the total cost of compensation going up dramatically, and yet at the same time we hear about these extremely modest per-person increases. And so I'm wondering, how do I understand that combination of factors that don't seem to add up, that we have a reduction, a 1,500-person reduction off of a 33,000-person workforce? What is that, a 5% reduction in the workforce, and yet now we're seeing this overall net increase in compensation, and yet I hear about how modest the increases are. How are those interacting, and how do I understand that?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I would start with the assumption or the statement that you made that compensation is going up dramatically. As I mentioned earlier, at least in your comment, you said the compensation was increasing, and during these years, as I had mentioned before, total compensation in the state has really remained constant for the last several years. So, you know, what you're seeing is the combination of what Assistant Commissioner Holmes mentioned, of insurance costs, of step costs, combined with decreasing the number of employees, trying to get the same or more work done. So your total compensation is about the same, but you're doing it with fewer employees.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe we can pursue this offline and I can actually see some real numbers, but a reduction in employees of 5% or 1,500 employees with an increase in total compensation of 60-some million tells me that on a per-person basis there has to be some substantial increase in average employee compensation in order for that to happen. That's just kind of simple math. And on the flip side, another line of questioning that we could go deeper into, but I don't think people have the tolerance for it. But as I look at the retirements, there were 1,600 retirements in the fiscal year 2011 and 3,900 hires. So obviously there was some other attrition or something that resulted in some of these net reductions in headcount. But what we're doing is we're taking, and you look at the average age of the retirees, and it's in the 50s and 60s, and you look at the average age of the people that are being hired, and they're way down on the lower age spectrum. So they're at the average compensation of the loss of retirees and the new employees should also equate to a much lower average per person compensation. And so, again, I don't understand, you know, where all these increases in compensation are coming from. And I'm not saying they're dramatic. I don't think I did say that. $60 million on a, whatever it is, a $2.4 billion biennial compensation is not a dramatic increase. But it some of it just doesn't make sense. And for me, and I know I made the comment, and Representative Winkler commented on it, and people had some reaction in the audience about having a fair contract. And, you know, for me, this is all about preparing our workforce and balancing it for the future. And we do have an imbalance in terms of the average age and the pending wave of retirements. And if we simply hire behind that wave of retirements and get people into the front end of the wage spectrum here and then they run through the steps and lanes, guess what? We're going to have this exact same problem 10, 15 years from now if we just hire behind this wave of retirees. And so the context for this contract negotiation isn't just a modest increase. It's, you know, are we doing the right things and how does this contract interact with how we're balancing and incentivizing and compensating the workforce? So I'll leave those questions aside, but it is still an open question for me. How could we be reducing the workforce by 1,500 people and still having an actual increase in compensation? And I don't, Ms. Holmes, looks like maybe you want to respond. If you do, that's great. Otherwise, I do have maybe two other quick questions and then I'll be done.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd be happy to take this offline and talk more in detail, but one of the factors that you're referring to is retirements that will show up in the total compensation. So if somebody retires, if there's any payout of accrued vacation, things like that, that goes into those numbers. So be happy to delve into that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That might be a good part of the explanation then. Just a different line of questioning, and you mentioned, Commissioner, and I know we had a couple provisions in our state government finance bill that we negotiated with the governor to build in a gain-sharing program so that state employees who make a significant, kind of above the normal contribution on a big project or some idea for saving. savings or serving citizens better, that you would have an ability, or the departments would have an ability, to reward them for those contributions in a unique way, not just locking them into steps and lanes and being here a long time, but to actually get rewarded for some of those unique contributions. And then we also had a performance appraisal requirements. And I know those are kind of works in process, but the goal of that would be to take some portion of compensation at the state and have it be performance-based. And, you know, much of what Representative Winkler was talking about in the private sector, those are generally all at-risk employees who are compensated for their performance, and usually in large measure their compensation is discretionary and based on their performance, or the performance of the business, or the performance of the unit they're in. And we wanted to move a little bit in that direction by putting 5% of state employee compensation based on performance, which actually would give the higher end, more experienced employees a chance to make more based on the value of their contributions. So my question for you is there anything in this new contract, I assume the answer is no, related to gain sharing or performance-based compensation? And if I'm right and the answer is no, was there discussion had at the bargaining table about the possibility of including some of those things as we move forward, or is this still something that's totally not even connected at all to compensation at the state of Minnesota?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about those things. I'll give it to Assistant Commissioner Holmes in 1 second for the contract specifics, because we have been, as an administration, following the governor's directive to manage performance, to try to create the structures necessary so we can get to those ideas such as gain sharing or the SAVI program and things like that. What we've been doing is investing in understanding the performance system, setting up achievement awards that are based upon activities and merit, and putting the building blocks in place so that that responsiveness, so that employees who are performing get recognition, get essentially money out of it. But also, this contract is about rewarding and making sure that people who just have increased talent, increased skills, are also rewarded. So it is all part of that same equation of working with respect with our workforce and having multiple ways to work in tandem. As for the specifics
Representative
of the contract, I don't believe there is anything in the contract regarding gain sharing in this contract.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, that's correct what Commissioner Showalter just said. But one of the things that we're doing as we're working on some of these new sorts of projects or ideas that you've encouraged us to look at, we make sure that our employees, our unions, are kept up to date what we're doing, are involved with what we're doing. We get their input. So if it does require some sort of change in the collective bargaining contract at some point, not everything would, we at least we have a common understanding of the issues that we're dealing with.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Downey.
Thank you. I figured that was probably the answer. And so, you know, from my perspective, we're still left with length of service and steps as a proxy for value and performance. And I don't think that's ultimately where we need to be to get the most out of our state workforce and to encourage innovation and to engage our workers in this difficult process of redesigning and restructuring what we're doing here for the future. So I want to encourage us collectively and the administration and the governor to think long and hard that as you develop those gain-sharing programs and that performance appraisal system, how we actually start weaving that into the compensation system. And I know that makes people nervous. I don't think it should, based on my own personal experiences in the private sector. I think it's a win-win for everybody, and I'd encourage the bargaining units to think long and hard about that as well. Can we start to build into these contracts over time something that actually rewards performance and value delivered and improvement and redesign as compared to just being here for a long time? And I don't diminish the value of being here for a long time and the contribution that people can make when they do have those experiences, but it isn't all that, and it feels to me like this contract is still just cementing those legacy step measures for value of contribution, and I think we need to move in the other direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, let me clarify. I meant no disrespect. I should have said private sector, and I apologize. Just to give you an example of some of the state employees that this was on my desk this morning. This is the IT contract for the exchange, so I get to read this twice, and then some state employee is going to have to sit down with me and help me understand what it is. So I understand the value of talent, and they probably should get some boredom pay for having to sit in a room with me and do this. But Representative Downey actually took a lot of my points. I am disappointed that after a year and a half of negotiations, we have a status quo contract with the raise. It is not the raise that is causing me to pause. It is the built-in status quo. Going forward, I was looking for a more flexible workforce, a rewarding success. We talk about top talent. I'm looking at the OET consolidation and know they're having trouble getting top talent. Minnesota has a shortage of IT talent right now, and I can't imagine that the state isn't impacted by that. And I know you talked about adjusting to market, but we need fundamental change in direction going forward so that those very talented, hardworking people get their just reward for doing the work, for finding savings, for making our state programs run better. I don't think a time of service and STEPS program is what most people are going to be dealing with in the future. And I think a lot of our state employees go to work every day and say, you know what, I have good ideas. I'd like to be rewarded. And so that's what I was looking for. And we've only had 10 days to look at this, where there's been a year and a half of the union and the administration going back and forth. And so I'm appreciative that the private sector is now going to have a little time to look at this, and we as legislators are going to have time to look at this. But I was hoping for more. And so my initial response is to truly pause and consider if this is the best thing going forward. I have asked for a review of some of the liabilities that are associated with this contract, and they haven't come forward yet, and it's not your fault. I think I asked for them on Monday, maybe last Friday, and I know you have a lot going on, and so I will look forward to seeing those liabilities so that I will be better informed as we go forward to make these decisions. Senator Metzen and Senator Winkler and Representative Downey are right. The 2% is modest. It's everything that's under it that concerns me. There's no fundamental change. Governor Dayton has talked broadly about reforming the way government works, making it more responsive. And I don't see this contract being in line with that value. And that's the summary of my comments. I thank you, Ms. Holmes, for your work. Even though I am disappointed, I know it has been a long road for you.
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Chairman Perry. Related to what Representative Downey mentioned and Senator Benson, I was just looking more globally at the broad process. As you go through this negotiations, what are some lessons learned, perhaps in comparisons during Pawlenty administration negotiations or Dayton administration negotiations? Are there any differences? Is it the same? And is there anything that we could do to make it more transparent so that we don't violate any statutes but can have more insight into it to make it more transparent so we can learn more about the process?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Daley, certainly the input that we've received during this round of negotiations from this committee and other members is very different than what's happened in the past. And so to the extent, and I respect and I invite your interest in what we're doing, I like it, I commend you. And I certainly I have learned things about that. Certainly just the fact of how it does help to communicate and that you that you're very interested in. Senator Benson, I think your comments were very, you know, that's a very good perspective and a very reasonable approach and a comment to where we need to move. And I appreciate that. So this sort of input, I think, is good. It is different than when it's been in the past, and that doesn't mean the past has been right, but it is different, and so we have to sort of adjust the way we do things too. So that certainly is one lesson learned. The other is the complications of a deficit and how it makes it very difficult to do anything new or innovative. There are a number of things, I think, that prevent us from moving forward in a way that some of you want us to. So we've heard you clearly, and thank you for your input.
Chairman.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I may add, having worked in both administrations, I'll point out the large issue in the corner, which is also the shutdown. I think having a shutdown is not a recommended strategy or quick labor negotiations or major changes in the contract pattern. And I think the more that we can work and get our work done in the Capitol on an orderly basis really affects a lot of other discussions, a lot of other negotiations, and this is one of them.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes and Commissioner Showalter, I'm curious about and would like to maybe kind of review how we got to where we are today. I remember, and maybe if you could help us review the timeline, and then the other part is a question is why. We were on a course about what I understood to be the last, best, and final offer from the administration to these two bargaining groups on our way to arbitration, and then suddenly it seems that the pot was sweetened with another offer from the government to these labor groups. It seems like the governor got out the taxpayer wallet and offered more. That's what it seemed like to me. But I'm curious what exactly happened and how we diverted from the course we were on and why.
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Draskowski, first of all, certainly some of the length of time that it's taken us is our first sort of offer that we made to the unions was rejected, and we scheduled an arbitration at that point. And we were, both sides were preparing to do that arbitration. It is not unusual in any sort of judicial or quasi-judicial hearing that's scheduled to resolve it the day before or the week before the hearing, when the parties really get down to, do I want to take that risk? There were risks that we had at arbitration in terms of how an arbitrator would decide and the sort of language that would come out. The union also had risks, and it's not unusual to get to the point where it's like, do we really want to take these risks, or is there some resolution at this point? I mean, it happens in the legislature. A lot of your really difficult decisions, you just can't get to that decision until right before a deadline. And that happens, I think, in these sort of quasi-judicial hearings that we have. And to characterize it as we opened up, Governor Dayton opened up the pocketbook, you know, that's not fully correct. Yes, we did offer to go to a 2%, but the union had never up to that point agreed to have any sort of changes to copays, deductibles, or anything. That was a move that they clearly made. So there were movements by both sides, and that's why it resulted in a voluntary agreement between the parties. That is always much better than an arbitration decision or any other way to resolve a conflict. A voluntary agreement is the best thing moving forward for relations.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Holmes. At one point, I remember it being said or very likely written that it was the last, best, and final offer from the government to these union groups. So I'm kind of confused. Either it was the last, best, and final offer from the governor, from your agency, or it wasn't. Was it the last, best, and final offer at the time, or was it not?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Draskowski, I'm not sure exactly what point in time you're referring to, but yes, we did make a last, best, final offer. It was rejected. So, and we had agreed that we would go to arbitration. Did that change afterwards? Was it really the last, best, final offer? No, we made adjustments and settled the contract. So I'm not trying to, I'm not sure what you're getting at. We did the last best final at this point in time. Yes, it did change.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes, can you characterize the bargaining groups and their support for the two different proposals, the first one, the last best and final offer, and then the one that was recently adopted by these two groups? Which of the two was more favorable to the bargaining groups?
Mr. Holmes. Chair, Representative Downey, the last best final offer that you're talking about that went out to the employees that I believe we reached at the end of February was not ratified by the employees. This particular proposal that's in front of you today was ratified. Is that what you're asking?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holmes, yes, it is. I'm curious now. The vote on the first, on what I understood to be the last, best, and final offer of the administration, can you tell us what the vote was on each of those two contracts? And it appears that from the outcome of those votes that we have a proposal in front of us that is much more favorable to the bargaining groups than the first one.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I think that's, yes, it's one that's more acceptable to them. I know that I don't recollect what the vote was in March on the previous offer. I know that this time it was approved by the employees in both groups. It was approved by approximately 90% of both groups, both AFSCME and MAPE.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Holmes, it seems that that the executive branch initiated, realizing the risk, a different proposal or a different round of negotiations to bring us out of the arbitration. Is that what happened?
Ms. Holmes.
Yes, we did. We did. We engaged in several rounds of mediation with the arbitrator prior to the arbitration. And yes, we came to understand. We made a decision the closer to in terms of our risks at that point. I mean, it's sort of it's a thing that whenever you have parties on two sides, they have a certain position, and the closer they get to judgment day, they may make adjustments. I think that you do that all the time here, so I'm still not quite clear what you're asking.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, perhaps I can help. I'm trying to sort of understand where you're trying to go. And I think the last and final offer, or best and final offer, is a statement for the arbitrator so that the arbitrator has two positions in which they can look at and basically make their ruling. The fact that the two parties and the arbitrator continue to talk before getting to that basically legal process or sort of that decisional process with a third party stepping in is just recognizing that we all believe in trying to work out those problems. And was the offer moved? Absolutely. Was the last and best and final offer different than what you're seeing today? Yes. It's the same thing for the unions, that their best and final offer is different than what is here today. And, in fact, their offers would have been, they moved from their position, we moved from our position.
Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, it seems it might benefit for us to do a quick overview of maybe the summary of the contracts. Could Commissioner Showalter, Mr. Hubinger, somebody do a quick 5-minute summary for us?
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, you're talking earlier about lessons learned. One of the first lessons I learned going into the city council in South St. Paul was somebody said you had to learn how to count. I can count on this subcommittee. And it looks to me, I'm not sure, but it looks to me like it's 6-4. And I suspect we could go on here for another 5 hours and go through every element of the contract, but that's why you have negotiations and bargaining. So I guess I'm almost inclined to, I think we should not recess, but adjourn the committee and not give that huge, huge 2% increase for the next 6 months.
I believe Representative Winkler had...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this actually, my question does kind of follow up on what Senator Metzen was just saying. I understand that if we don't take action and nothing further happens in 30 days, this contract goes into effect on an interim basis until such time as the legislature can take it up in January. If we take action to reject it, the legislature would have to take it up in January. If we approve it, it goes into effect, and the legislature still has to deal with it again in January. But the question I have is, I know there are a lot of other bargaining units that are, I think, affected by this as well. And I looked at this list, and including just three that popped out to me were basically state troopers, nurses, and correctional guards. What happens if we don't do anything on this contract, those bargaining units?
Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, it's complicated. We typically, the insurance benefits that are established in the AFSCME and MAPE contract, in the past, we have approval of those contracts, and then we typically enter into memorandums of understanding with the other unions on the insurance piece because it is uniform. And then we go to the bargaining table and finalize their contracts. We've had some negotiations with a number of the unions, preliminary negotiations, but quite frankly, they are all waiting to see what is happening with this insurance package and with this wage proposal. So if this is not approved, we still have an obligation to bargain with them. If we, to have different insurance plans just complicates the administration of the insurance program. It's very complicated, and to tell you the truth, we still have to discuss what our options would be and how we'll handle them with the other bargaining units and talk to them, of course, depending on what happens, what this committee does with this. So everything is kind of up in the air.
Well, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, I'm a little more optimistic than you are. I mean, I think after having a hearing today and seeing just the benefits of the contract to the state and its modest nature, and Senator Benson and Senator Daley, I mean, I agree with you. I think that if we worked together and actually sat down at the table and worked with labor, we could probably find ways of, and Representative Downey, you're talking about this too, of building more pay for performance, recognizing value better. I think we could find lots of ways to do that, but I don't think we're going to do that by holding up this contract. I don't think that's going to get us anywhere. We've already had a very disruptive couple of years, and it seems to me that we could approve this, we could move on, we could not hold up all the other bargaining units, including people that handle public safety. We don't have to hold all of them up because we're disappointed that this didn't go farther. I think it never was going to because of the real challenges we've had this biennium. So I would just make a pitch that we approve it today. I won't make a motion and have it fail, but I would, if I had any kind of little nod from some of the other committee members that they'd be ready to go today, I'd make a motion to approve it because I think we're only making problems worse by waiting on this. We're not helping the taxpayer by waiting.
All right. Thank you. There are still, I know, questions out there, and we're 2 hours into this, and I'd planned for 90 minutes for questions and that, but... I know there are reports, questions about the FTE reports, the workforce report, and I know Mr. Morocco has been sitting here, and I know there are committee members that have some questions about the dependent audit and issues with that. And so, as I said from the onset, I didn't agree with you, but I do agree with you that what happened with the budgets in the last session coming out, being negotiated, boom, and done. That gave great pains to a lot of people. And that's why this is an informational meeting, because we need to have some answers to questions. And we could sit here, as Senator Metzen says, for 5 hours. I would rather do that over the email system so there's comfort in getting it, the information back. So with that... It is my intent to adjourn and reconvene back on the 23rd, the day before the special session, at 8:30, and we will take an up or down vote. But in the meantime, I fully expect all the committee members to make sure that they have the other questions answered, and but that would be my intent, the 23rd at 8:30. With that, we are adjourned.
Waste of time. Waste of energy, right? Hi. Thank you.